Hi, I'm Rob Wright.
And I'm Jen Follett.
And we are here with the biggest stories of the week for CRN, the front page five for the week ending.
September,
and I always forget this.
September 30th.
Yay.
Last day of the month.
Yes, and it's been an eventful month. Jen, why don't you tell us what's first on the list? Or last, I guess.
Yes, actually.
We're counting backwards.
Last. But before we even get into this, I just want to remind our loyal audience that the CRN Fast Growth.
Yes.
There's a great package online. There's a slideshow that shows the top 25 fastest growing solution providers in the market. So these are definitely the guys that are out there leading the charge. Some really phenomenal, outrageously large growth rates out there over the last couple of years, despite the economy. So it's a really great list to check out and see what your peers are up to. That said, let's jump into the five. Number five for this week is a story about our dear friends at Google. They've been in the midst of a lawsuit with the government, and it took a really interesting turn this week when the government actually admitted, the Department of Interior, actually admitted that they maybe hadn't done the most fair job of putting some things out to bid.
Yeah, admitting might be a strong word, but basically what happened was the department, U.S. Department of Interior, had put a cloud project out to bid a while back and had accepted a deal from Microsoft to do some cloud solutions, cloud email, I believe, and collaboration system for the department. And Google cried foul saying, hey, we were never allowed to bid for this. We weren't contacted. We have cloud offerings. And Google sued the federal government, which, you know, often you don't really win when you sue the federal government. And in last week's news, Google actually filed a motion to drop the lawsuit, which was kind of curious. But now this week we kind of see why. The Department of Interior basically agreed to redo the bidding and scrap the Microsoft Cloud plan that it had in place and open it up to more companies like Google in exchange for Google dropping its lawsuit against the department. And basically that's what happened.
That's what they wanted in the end anyway.
Yeah.
It was a chance to compete.
So win-win. It was just kind of interesting because obviously, this has some implications for our readers and for the channel in general, anyone that's really into cloud, because obviously there's a big government initiative to embrace cloud computing and cloud solutions as a way to lower costs, and Google and Microsoft are going head to head in that cloud arena, and solution providers are looking at this wondering, where's the money to be made, and who do I place my bet with? Is it Microsoft? Is it Google? Is it another company? So it's kind of interesting that this shook out the way that it did, and like I said, it's pretty much win-win for both sides, the government and Google. Microsoft, I don't know about, but I mean, I'm guessing they will get a chance to compete for the new bid now that it has been. The Department of Interior actually sent a statement out to our cloud reporter, Andrew Hickey, saying, we're going back to the drawing board on this completely, and we'll open it up and we'll see what happens. So very interesting stuff.
Absolutely. Which brings us to another interesting story, number four on our list for the week, which is actually a story from our sister in print, CRN, the September issue of CRN. This is the cover story, and it's really a story that takes a look at cloud provider rising, and it's a look at the channel today, sort of the landscape, and how this new group of what we're calling transformative VARs are really out there grabbing onto cloud computing and changing the dynamics of the market. There's a lot of really exciting stuff going on there for channel partners, as many of you know, but there's this really relatively select group of partners right now that are kind of leading the charge, and this article takes a look at what some of them are up to and really kind of acts as a roadmap for what other solution providers might want to be looking at as far as business model of the future.
Yeah, and as we've seen lately, there are a lot of guys that have moved from managed services and embraced cloud services and made a lot of money off of that transition, obviously. And it's one of the things that's powering these guys to pretty obscene growth rates, as you mentioned at the start of the podcast, Jen, the CRN Fast Growth list. So very, very interesting indeed the way these guys are changing their business model.
And that brings us to a great story we had this week, number three on our list. I was really happy to have this story because it was a real scoop story that our intrepid Kevin McLaughlin went and dug out. But it was a story on Acer and the pricing on their forthcoming S3 Ultra book, which had not been announced as of yet, but Kevin found through some distribution sources that it was going to be priced at $899.99, and that was then confirmed by some of our distribution friends.
Yes.
And that pricing, it's kind of a shocker.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, it's not shocking when you think about it that Acer has come in and undercut someone on pricing, but it's pretty interesting that it's an Ultra Book model that, you know, we had been told time and again by manufacturers and by Intel that it was going to be sort of $1,000 and above, premium, maybe high performance, maybe too strong a way to describe ultrabooks, but higher performance than your average notebook, and have a lot of capabilities, longer lasting battery life, enhanced graphics for HD video, things like that. So the fact that Acer was able to come in and kind of say $1,000, try $899, or who knows, maybe even lower down the road, is pretty interesting because obviously computer manufacturers are looking for any way to kind of boost PC sales right now, and that's one of the reasons that Intel has started this this Ultrabook category. So now you have you have Acer coming in and firing the first shot in this sort of rush to embrace the Ultrabook the same way that a lot of vendors rushed in on the netbook.
I mean, it was shocking. I guess what I meant was that it actually undercut themselves because they had already been, they already had pricing out on their European models, and this is actually $200 below even that.
Yeah.
And they are the first to dip below the $1,000 mark set by Intel, but of course we have another player waiting in the wings. We're all anxiously awaiting the pricing on the Asus model.
Yes.
That's soon to come out, and that one's probably going to be the next salvo in the price war.
And it will be a price war. I mean, it's one of those things where if that model is in demand, you're going to see a lot of vendors kind of jockeying for position to try to get sort of the most attractive price point without completely sacrificing profitability. So unfortunately, it may defeat the purpose of even making that category because you are trying to get a little bit more scratch for your model, for your notebook model. So scratch.
So you can cut that out.
Yeah.
So that actually brings us to the second story on the list from our friend Kevin, who is a very busy man this week, but he has been really closely following the news coming out of HP, and this week had a great story at the beginning of the week where he checked in with a lot of HP partners, and I don't think it's surprising to any of us here, but obviously found that they are really calling on HP and their new CEO, Meg Whitman, to reverse course on a lot of these extremely unpopular decisions that were rolled out under her predecessor, Leo Apotheker.
Yeah, and it's interesting. They're basically asking the current regime, the new regime at HP, even though it's not that new, because a lot of the board members have been there under Leo as well, to review some of these decisions and some of these moves, like autonomy, spinoff of Personal Systems Group, at least just reconsider them, if not outright reverse course on them. And the interesting thing is that that may not happen. And I had a conversation with Kevin earlier. He couldn't be on the podcast right now, but we spoke earlier, and he had some interesting things to say to that. So we're going to go to that tape and have him explain, sort of what's going on with HP right now, what we're seeing. And again, this is Kevin McLaughlin, our HP reporter and West Coast Bureau Chief, explaining what he's seeing on the HP front. Kevin, pretty chaotic time right now for HP, going back to the news last week that they got a new CEO. Kind of give us a recap of the news that's come out of HP and some of the things that you've written.
Yeah, I would say chaotic might be a charitable way to describe it, Rob. Wow, where to begin? I mean, I guess the takeaway right now, that I think that HP partners have is, okay, you know, we've got Meg Whitman here. She's the new CEO, and we're not really sure, you know, what she's going to bring. She's definitely a brilliant person who's achieved a lot and in her various endeavors, but yeah, she doesn't bring any channel experience to the table, which is fine. It's not to say that partners aren't willing to give her a chance, but I think it's really just the general sentiment from the HP people that I've spoken with in the channel is that, you know, we're willing to go out there and, you know, we're open, our minds are open, but she's also got, you know, some things to prove as far as, you know, cleaning up the mess that that Leo left. So I would say it's just a sort of general neutral feeling right now. And, you know, the drama continues to unfold with Oracle now, you know, being rumored to, you know, be in the mix, and also, you know, giving Larry Ellison fighting, you know, behind the scenes about autonomy and all this stuff. So I don't know. I if I was an HP partner right now, I'd kind of be turning off, trying to tune out all the drama and just, you know, trying to give Meg Whitman at least a chance.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I've come across in some of the conversations I've had with some HP guys, it's sort of the same sentiment. They want to see the best in the decision that HP has made. They want to move on from the last 12 months, the Leo Apotheker regime, if you will, the sort of the drama that came with that, a lot of the decisions that he made that were not popular or were at least second guessed and kind of questioned. And maybe we should back up a little and kind of talk about that. Now, it wasn't like Leo Apotheker as a CEO when he came into HP. It wasn't as if he came in and said, you know, we're not going to sell through the channel anymore, or we're gonna sell more direct. He didn't do anything, I guess, that sort of threatening or disruptive to solution providers and the HP channel business. However, there were a lot of things that have gone on with that company over the last year that I guess have given solution providers less confidence in HP's strategy and direction. Would you agree?
I would say that the thing that when Leo took over, he didn't really address the channel directly until a couple of months later. And he did so in a 3-minute video that HP brought our attention to. And I think it might've actually just been made specifically for CRN's readership. And in that video, he said, I'm not going to change the course of the channel and everything's fine. I'm committed to channel partners. So I wouldn't say he did anything really, you know, negative to the channel. I think it was just specifically, I would say if you had to pick one thing, it was the PSG spinoff or sale. I think that's the one that sort of hits home with most of, you know, at least the CRN channel readership. And I would say that, you know, here's the thing about Meg Whitman. I think that issue still hasn't been addressed, right?
Right.
When she addressed people, when they brought her out as the CEO earlier this month or in mid-September, basically she endorsed all the decisions that Apotheker made. And she said, you know, I'm on board with the autonomy acquisition. I'm also, quote-unquote, committed to the PSG. Now, I don't know, if you dissect that a little bit, she didn't really say what committed means. I mean, does committed mean, you know, okay, we've got two options on the table, spinoff or sale, right? So does committed mean I'm more leaning towards one or the other? I mean, if she's saying committed to a sale, that's not something that PSG partners want to hear. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, HP, Todd Bradley has definitely said, like, we would prefer a spinoff. You know, that's the way we're leaning. We'd like, you know, the board to hurry up and make their minds up on this. But I felt like, you know, Meg Whitman kind of came in and didn't really say anything without, you know, she said some things, but she didn't really say anything as far as the future of PSG. So that's definitely hanging there like the sword of Damocles for the HP channel.
Yeah, when you think about it, it seems like there still is not yet a sort of clear direction for this company. You have a lot of new board members over there. You have obviously a new CEO, and you have them presenting sort of the same strategy and vision that they had maybe a year ago when Leo Apotheker came in. So, yeah, you're correct in that I'm sure there are a lot of partners out there wondering, okay, well, we have a new CEO. The guy that we weren't fond of is gone. But what is really going to change at this point? I still may be left with an HP that does not have a PC business, and I may be having to do my PC business with another entity. And, you know, God knows if that entity is going to be, you know, another PC manufacturer. Could be Samsung, could be Acer, it could be a dark horse candidate that we don't know about. It looks as though, at least in the short term, that the direction that the company was going in is not going to change then, correct?
I think if you look at HP, most channel partners, it's not that they don't care who the CEO is, it's just that their interactions are happening with people like Dave Donatelli, Todd Bradley, Stephen DeFranco, Stephen DeWitt. I mean, these lieutenants are the ones that are really running the show in the channel. So obviously, channel partners would love to see HP hire someone like Mark Hurd, but that's not going to happen. I mean, he's not coming back. And frankly, there's nobody out there who really espouses the channel as much as he did. So I think if you look at what's happening at HP, there's been no damage done, right? Uncertainty is a form of damage. It can be a corrosive effect, but you know, if HP decides to spin off PSG, that's not the end of the world. A sale of PSG obviously is something different, but I don't know. I think if Meg Whitman just comes in and says, hey, lieutenants, keep running the channel, keep the partners happy, keep the programs we have in place, I think that it'll be business as usual. And I think that's a pretty high possibility of that'll unfold.
So one of the things that was discussed, one of the things that a lot of partners and members of the media, press and analysts have talked about is the question about why HP hasn't promoted from within and why HP seems to be, bent on hiring CEOs from outside the company rather than some of the candidates that have been there at HP for a number of years, whether it's Todd Bradley or Ann Livermore. This subject has come up, and Ray Lane had some interesting things to say about that. Kevin, can you kind of discuss what he said and give us your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting when I think it was a Q&A during the call in which Meg Whitman was introduced as CEO. I think someone asked, why do you guys never really promote from within as far as the CEO position? And Ray Lane said, well, you know, there's obviously a lot of really qualified candidates, and he didn't mention anyone by name, but he said, you know, several of them run multi-billion dollar businesses. I think he was alluding to Todd Bradley when he said one of them runs a $40 billion business. Todd Bradley's obviously been rumored for a long time to be in line for to succeed, you know, to the CEO position to become the next CEO. And I think it's really that's a big question. I think it's a big question that a lot of HP partners have too. I mean, it's also strange when you look at like Stephen DeFranco came over and was promoted after just over a year. And Stephen DeWitt promoted to position as the head of WebOS business unit. And I guess that's a really big question, and I don't have an answer for it, and I don't think that any HP partners have an answer for it either. It really wouldn't be the worst thing to see them promote from within, and I don't know, maybe after Meg Whitman that'll be what happens, but for right now it's an unanswered question.
So Meg Whitman, now the CEO of HP, it's going to be interesting. I'm guessing they're going to have their partner conference early next year, I believe, correct?
Yes, it's in February.
So what is what do you think that's going to be like from your perspective covering HP?
Well, I'll tell you what it was like last year. And I have to say that Apotheker's keynote at the America's Partner Conference last year was pretty impressive. It was his first time in front of partners. And people were impressed after it was over. I mean, there was a lot of like sort of murmuring in the audience, and people were like, wow, I'm pretty impressed by what this guy brings to the table. He said all the right things. There wasn't a whole lot of sort of lip service. He seemed pretty genuine about the things that HP Partners were interested in. And so I think this year or next year when Meg Whitman takes the stage, I think it's going to be a little tougher for her because, we've got, people are going to say just last year, Apotheker stood up on stage and told us all these things. And then he told us about how great the touchpad was. And then they killed it 6 weeks after its launch. So I think that, partners are going to be looking to Meg Whitman a little bit more with a critical eye than they did with Apotheker. Having said that, if you had to make a prediction, I would say that, she's very shrewd, and I think someone who ran for political office knows very well how to let the qualified people advise her and sort of provide the guidance. So I don't know. It may be a stretch, but certainly I don't think she's going to get up there and overextend herself. I think she's going to probably let the lieutenants drive the discussion, and then she's just going to get up there and say, look, I got their back. I got your back. Let's go make money.
Well, that would be some welcome news. I mean, I think you make a great point because people forget that, when Mark Hurd came into HP, he did not have it wasn't like he was coming from another major IT company that had a big channel strategy. That was not his background, and he became sort of a channel stalwart on the job. And maybe that will happen with Meg Whitman. I mean, she's like you said. Seems to be a shrewd person, shrewd executive, ran for political office, didn't win, but I'm sure she learned a lot in that experience. So I'm guessing she can put that to good use. So I'm sure it'll make for an interesting year in 2012 for HP.
Absolutely.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate the time and the giving us your thoughts on all that's been going on with HP, and there has been a lot of it, and we'll be sure to check in with you in the future to get more updates.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, so that was Kevin on the latest with HP. And
that brings us to number one.
To number one, yes.
Number one on the list was actually breaking news here as we speak. Should be on the site just fresh on the site. And this is a story from Chad Bernstein, who covers networking in particular. This story is about Cisco. And it's really a great piece of journalism here on Cisco has put out some internal documentation, an internal memo, really advising its sales force on how they can capitalize on all of this hoopla out of HP.
Hmm.
So it's kind of a marching orders, really, from it was written by the marketing department there, but sent out by Rob Lloyd, their sales chief, and really just gives all of the talking points and all of the research that the considerable resources of Cisco have come up with onto where all of these moves make Cisco vulnerable. I'm sorry, where all of these moves make HP vulnerable. As we know, HP and Cisco are pretty bitter rivals.
Yes.
Starting in the networking space, now in the data center space.
Pretty much everywhere.
Pretty much everywhere. There's been a lot of back and forth between the two of them over the years. And I'm just going to point to one section of this document, which you will see right now on CRN.com, where they talk about the channel. So what they're saying is, without PCs leading the sale, so this is under the assumption that the PSG business gets spun off or sold, we expect HP's average channel face time to decrease by approximately 50%, average transaction size to decline by 35%, and channel funding to decline, making it more difficult and expensive to reach and serve the channel partners through whom HP currently sells the majority of its technology to small enterprise and public sector customers.
Interesting.
If those numbers are accurate, that is a blockbuster.
Yeah, that is that's devastating for HP.
And what this clearly means is that they are going to be going after those HP partners like there's no tomorrow, trying to convince them to move away from the product lines and move towards Cisco. I mean, who isn't as far as the other HP rivals go, but It's a really interesting look at the backroom workings at Cisco and how they are really trying to capitalize and stir up some things in the wake of what's been going on.
Sure,
at HP.
Sure. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because obviously Cisco's going to be working pretty hard to make some of those things come true. But it's interesting that a networking company kind of is taking a very detailed, strategic look at how the PC business. They don't have a PC business, but they're clearly looking in a very detailed way at how that's going to affect HP. And it looks like they've drilled down pretty hard.
Yeah, and they go on to discuss the uphill battle they see HP having in enterprise software,
yep.
The fact that the strategic approach is pretty undefined, and the unclear, what they're calling the unclear future for networking for out of HP's business there. So, you know, really kind of tweaking their message to really just try to stick it to HP and capitalize on it while they can.
That's a good one. I'm sure we're going to be talking a lot about the repercussions of that memo and that plan and it going public, and what HP has to say about it as we move forward into October now. Jeez, time flies. Well, I'm Rob Wright.
And I'm Jen Follett.
And thanks for listening to us, and we'll be back next week.
See you then.